Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle in general. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. Well, today we speak first with Gail Loveland and Liz Longhurst from the National Ability Center. They're going to talk about the center's focus on lifelong engagement. It's a new topic we haven't spoken with them about before.
And very appropriate for this particular show.
Yes.
Then Catherine Kemp Guiley joins us to talk about her new book, Mountain Mantras, Wellness and Life Lessons from the Slopes.
And last on today's program is our very own local author, Katie Mullally. She's joining us to share her latest publication. It's a wonderful series of children's books, and this one is called The Land of And. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these words.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew, Director of Skier Services for Park City and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City instructors bring a passion for teaching skiing and snowboarding that help guests build confidence, improve their skills, and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Join us for Cool Science Radio Thursday at 9 a.m. after NPR News.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining. Brought to you by Nexus IT, Peak Art and Frame, and the Natural History Museum of Utah.
Hi, I'm Josh Carr of Park Meadows Country Club, sponsor of KPCW's The Mountain Life. Park Meadows, now managed by Stein Erickson Lodge, is a private country club located in town offering a Jack Nicklaus signature course on mountain facilities at Deer Valley, Pool and Fitness Center. Golf and social memberships are available at 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, we all know about the National Ability Center's work with veterans and anyone with physical challenges and how their adaptive sport programs add to the quality of life for their clients. But have you heard about the Lifelong Engagement Program? Well, Executive Director Gail Loveland joins us to explain how this initiative is helping people with MS, dementia, Alzheimer's, orthopedic issues, and really just about anything that keeps people from recreating to get back out there and play, but maybe a little differently than you did at an earlier time in life. She's also joined by Liz Longhurst, who's a therapeutic specialist. Recreation specialist. Good morning both of you, Gail and Liz. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks so much for having us this morning.
It's nice to have you. And I think that at the National Ability Center, for a long time, we didn't know about your work with veterans. And then we were exposed to this whole world of amazing things you do out there with veterans. Now we didn't know about your lifelong program. And so talk a little bit about how big it is and what you do.
Yeah, it's a great program. And I would say the more and more I talk to people who've been in this community for a while, they're saying, you aren't telling the community all the things you're doing. And for sure, this one is important to me, and I hope important to all of us, because personally, I want to stay as active as I can for as long as I can. I have family members, my dad, who, you know, told me he stopped cycling with his grandchildren because he just couldn't cycle anymore because of those back and hip issues. And I have to tell you, I was shocked. I was like, Dad, what do I do for work? And he said, well, I don't have a disability. Well, I'm the Ability Center. We work at the National Ability Center, and I have a type of bike that would work for him that was a recumbent three-wheeled that would offer some balance and some back support. So why should he sit on the sidelines and not participate with his family and his grandchildren and not be healthy and active for as long as possible? So I can tell you one thing. He doesn't tell me he can't do things anymore because I won't listen to him.
Very good. Well, lifelong engagement, it seems a thing in this community that we just do. Like, you look at 70-year-olds as they fly by you in a Nordic ski race or something. And I would imagine that you've learned a lot just being in this community about what is possible as we age.
For sure. And that people are in this community making their own adaptations. I think electric bikes out there are part of that adaptations that we're seeing some folks doing as they get older so that they can stay more active with their family. And some people are absolutely active and out there and doing all the things that they love the way they used to. But oftentimes when you start talking to people, they'll say, yeah, I used to ski. it's just not for me anymore. But and then they just leave it at that, and they just stopped. But if we start asking questions, why did you stop skiing? Well, my body just, I get too tired too quickly, doesn't work the same way it used to. Maybe they've been diagnosed with something like MS, and they just need a little bit more support to get out there, but they don't need to stop doing that activity, especially in this community when you all grew up as a ski family and you were out there every weekend. Again, why should you be that person on the sideline when we can help support you continue to do that thing you love?
And Gail, how long have you been with the National Ability Center?
I've been here 5 years.
As the executive director?
Yep. Yeah. And then I've been in an adaptive recreation for a decade or more.
And so I just think back to the beginnings, and Lynn kind of hit upon this, how it seems like the mission of the National Ability Center continues to evolve, and part of that evolution is broadening. You've gone from really working with people through adaptive sports that have challenges, which, you know, translates to people with different abilities. We all have challenges, and we know that that's kind of the mission statement of the National Ability Center. But now, as Lynn said, there was the veterans that you've broadened out to. Now you're broadening out to a whole nother segment. Is that going to continue, or do you think that at some point, you know, you'll be within a well-defined vessel or parameters?
That's a great question. I mean, I think one of the things is we've always been doing that. We were founded as a veteran organization. That was our first grant for 15 Vietnam veterans.
Well, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've always been serving individuals that needed our support. But I think what's happened sometimes is that people have put the National Ability Center in a box as to who we serve, and they don't fit in that box. And what we're trying to say is we're another recreation program. We're like PC Mark or Base and Rec. We just happen to have different expertise and different equipment to keep you active if you have some different challenges. Or as we talk about too, just as volunteering, if you want to stay active that way, maybe you're not as fast on the slopes as you used to be, but we for sure could use you in our programs as a volunteer so that you're staying healthy and active and getting out there.
Well, and that's interesting, because I was going to ask you, you know, you just made a comparison to the MARC and just being another recreation program or facility, and the MARC has funding from the city. You have funding sources of your own. And how does kind of that broadening out translate to support for the organization? And what are the hurdles to getting people to consider the National Ability Center to not only support, not only engage, but to say, yeah, this works for me, not just put you in that box over here and think, no, it doesn't work for me. How do you break down those walls?
I mean, I think the first part really has been just taking a look at how people define ability or disability, and that's our first hurdle. As you said from the beginning, we all have challenges. For instance, I had challenges with a knee injury, and I used an adaptive cycle so that I could stay active and continue to cycle a bit, but I needed some help, and so I had some support in doing that. I know I just want to stay as active as I can, and I want the National Ability Center to be seen as that resource. Another great example happened a couple of years ago with someone from the chamber, and she was in her 40s, and she went, she had, I think it was a foot surgery or hip surgery, and things just weren't working. And so here she has the young kids, and they're out on the slopes, and she had gone to the PT. They couldn't find a solution. She went to the boot fitter. She couldn't find a solution, and I was able to sit there and say, no, that's where we play. We're in between that. Mm-hmm. We know recreation, and we have the expertise on our team to figure out some solutions, some adaptations. If it requires duct tape, we'll do it. Foam, we'll make it work. We're going to get you out there. We're not going to let you say no. And I think mostly for us, it's a mission-driven thing. I evaluate our organization on, are we achieving our mission? And if we're having people in our own community who are stopping to recreate when we have the opportunity to help them, then we're not doing our mission in full. And that's something that we need to be reaching out and talking to, because I don't want you not out there with your family.
So I would imagine that there's a lot of technology that's continually evolving. And Liz, maybe you can speak to this. Some years ago, it was over a decade ago, and so I'm curious about this technology. There was a man who had been a very active skier his whole life, and he was, I don't know, 85 or 90. And he had this contraption that it was kind of along his backside that he slid into the back of his boots. And when he would, you know, you compress and your knees bend as you go over a mogul or something, it would help him, almost like a spring that would help him back up. Is that something? I mean, I'm kind of curious about what you use out there.
Well, we have a lot of equipment that we utilize. I personally have not seen that contraption. I'd be very interested in researching that. But we have a lot of tools that we use. So if somebody gets tired or their legs get fatigued sooner than their brain does, we have contraptions that can help them balance and stay motivated throughout their ride. If you want to keep riding, we will find a way to help you continue riding.
So. Okay. All right. So let's talk about some of that equipment. So you talked about the recumbent, is that the word, recumbent bicycles?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we see a lot of those around. Electric bikes. Boy, one thing that really surprised me was, when the city had to deal with their, what would be the ordinance on allowing electric bikes?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, no one's going to ride those things anyway. They're really heavy. And then last summer, it exploded around town. And I did realize that it is really a great way for people to stay active. So do you have a fleet of electric bikes or do you rent them?
We don't have a ton of just general electric bikes that are standard, but we do have some that are recumbents for some of our hand cyclists, for them to be able to be independent. Before they could do some of it, but they would get stuck in certain areas. And now they just have that little electric assist. And again, I'll tell you about my knee injury. I used an electric bike for a little while because I wanted to keep up with my friends and get out there. And I had that little electric assist. And sometimes I went faster because I used a lot of that electric assist to stay engaged. I think, again, when we look at it, we say, not just getting out there being physically active, but the social part of your health and well-being is really important. So how do we get you to be able to stay with that community that feeds you and get you excited and keeps you healthy?
You have a story about the National Ability Center co-founder Michi White using your services.
Yeah, so Michi was back here. She still works with the National Ability Center, specifically on our international program. So it's really neat. She's able to start grassroots programs again in other parts of the world. And so she had come with a group from Thailand here, and they went out cycling, and she had not been out on a bike for a while because of her back issues as well, so similar to my father. And she used an adaptive cycle, and she just came back and said, I can't believe, I never envisioned that this organization that I helped co-found would be a direct benefit to me. But again, all our bodies change sometimes. So, and we have a lot of equipment on the slopes, too, that can help support people to stay out longer, give them a little more balance. On the Alzheimer's side, I would say, I know a lot of people in this community who are affected by Alzheimer's, myself as well, who have family members. And one of the things you want to do is help that individual stay active, but you also need some respite for yourself. You need a break. And what a great opportunity to use our expertise on the cognitive side to have that person get out on the slopes again, to enjoy the space that they're in where their mind is, and take them out, and then also to give that family member a bit of a rest while somebody's out there. So we've had some great success there, and I think people don't quite think of that for us too.
What do those programs look like when you take people and use any example? It could be the Alzheimer's example. I mean, are they in a group? They're supervised? You have people who obviously are guides, or what do you call them? And what does that actually look like?
Yeah, we have instructors, and Liz can talk a little bit more to our ratios, but for sure they are getting an individual lesson or guide to whatever ability or goal that they have. So if their goal is just to get out there and have fun, and that's always our number one goal, we're going to do that. If they want to learn something in the process, we'll do that as well. But maybe Liz can add a little bit more there.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a young man who comes to swim with us, and his goal really isn't to learn swim, how to swim. He's a pretty proficient swimmer. It's actually to be social and be active while he's social. So even though he has a one-on-one instructor in that program, we group up and we put him with people that he has things in common with. And we work on exercises or different swim strokes, but we always have a social component in that lesson.
And do people who are looking for that social connection, do they use the center as their nexus for their day? I mean, do they come in the morning and have coffee and hang out and do a ski program or a swim program? And what does a day look like for somebody? Or are they dropping in for 45 minutes and then they're off to wherever they are the rest of the time?
It for sure depends on the individual, like any other organization. So some folks come to us for a week at a time, stay in our ranch and have that experience. And yes, they're drinking coffee and eating dinner there and everything else. Other folks may just come to us for a piece of equipment. Hey, I want to stay active. And so show me what you have that I can try out to keep me active. And maybe they'll eventually buy that piece of equipment on their own, or they might rent from us. Some adaptive bikes are like $5,000 to $10,000. So you want to make sure you got the right plan before you invest there. It just depends on the individual, if they're there for a couple hours or really in and out and getting set.
And then you've talked about there's the skiing. We all kind of have our understanding of the national abilities and skiing because you've been doing it for so long. Mm-hmm. The bike riding, and you have a pretty big horse program, I think, also.
Yeah.
Are there other programs that we might not know about that you're involved in?
Yeah, you know, one I love to talk about is our indoor rock climbing wall. It's small, but when I talk about lifelong engagement, sometimes I hear from grandmothers who say, you know, I'd love to rock climb, but I'm not going to REI with the 22-year-old that I don't feel like really understands how my body works. But I want to understand what my grandchildren do. And we are those individuals that have that expertise that can take them slowly to just trying rock climbing for the first time in a very safe and welcoming environment. And, you know, studies say we don't have to, I think, tell everybody, but the longer you can stay active, the healthier you're going to be. So we just want to continue to make sure people know we're a resource for that.
It's so interesting when you talk, just a minute ago, you talked about how people will come and stay for a week. I think I'm picturing sort of a retreat for, you know, an older generation to say, I want to come and do the ropes course and I want to come and do the rock climbing wall and have an electric bike. I don't have any particular injuries or diagnoses or how do you, I'm wondering if you market that, and because you're funded the way you are, how do you come up with a price point for that?
Yeah, I mean, our price points are always on the lower side. We stay consistent per the different groups. So we still do fundraise about 70% of the cost of our programming. So going into some of these groups, I think you asked that question, how are you going to continue to broaden your mission and get support? We look for grant funders. For some individuals, for sure, they want to give beyond what the cost of our programs are to help others. In those week retreats, it would depend on the group that brought that group through. Mostly we have our lodges used for group programming, mm-hmm. not individuals. But I have to tell you, I think what we've come up with is we're not going to sit there and double check medical diagnosis. If you feel like you need our help, we want to be there to support you. We are sure going to ask what all that information is because we can better support you with that. But we're not out there spending a lot of our time or our money or resources trying to verify every single need that you have. We want to say, hey, we're here. You think you need some help. You want to just ask us questions. If you're hearing us right now and you're in this community and you say, I don't know if I need the National Ability Center, just come in and ask. We'll help you. We just want to get the word out that we are a resource for that.
Well, so often when I was in the leadership Park City class about 10 or oh, who knows,
it was forever ago.
It was probably 20 years ago. Anyway, we did our ropes course out there, and I thought, I wish this were just open to the public. And I think I've been to a birthday party when my kids were little at the rock climbing wall. And again, you know, how is it? I mean, talk a little bit about that, if you would.
I mean, our mission always comes first, and that needs to be the priority. And as we get tight, and I will tell you right now, we already have wait lists for this winter and are still hiring. We're looking for volunteers to help meet all the needs that come to us for our winter lessons. But so we put this. So if it's a birthday party and we can make a birthday party accessible for every one of your kids and their friends because somebody might have a different ability, please have that at the National Ability Center. That's why we're there. If you have a barrier to recreation physically, or if you need some support because you have a cognitive or developmental disability, please come to us and we're there to support you. Did I answer your question?
Yes, I think it did.
And how do people find out about the programs and what's available?
It's all online, and they can also, like I said, if you're local, just come to our community. I think, again, I invite people to think about when your family members are visiting.
Right.
Do you have a family member who you haven't been able to figure out how to get back out on the slopes, but you think that they would benefit? I mean, stroke is another one we haven't talked about. For sure, we have the expertise and the equipment to help that family member get back out and maybe even and hopefully to regain some strength in some areas that they may have lost.
And I know you've gone through big programs where the campus has changed and there's been expansion through the years at the NAC. What do you see in the near-term future, kind of the 5 years from now and 10 years from now? Is there a master plan of continued growth and expansion, or do you think you have the facilities to meet the needs with programming that you see?
No, we are in a process of talking to the city about a master plan development and going through that, and we've had some initial conversations, and they've been very receptive. We're not in a real rush. We're taking it very slowly to make sure that we're making the right plans to meet the growing needs. One of the reasons we are so successful and we continue to get so many requests for help is because of the expertise and the years of experience the National Ability Center has. Another is just ability awareness and disability awareness nation and worldwide. So we're a program that's been out there for a lot of years, but there's a lot of new programs coming in, and just in general, a view that there are a lot more folks that can get out there and be active through media and all those things. And that is also driving some of our growth. And then I'll just add and end on this point. It is the fact that we're an aging population that's getting older and living longer with more complications. And so that's why we're talking about lifelong engagement today.
So, Liz, I want to ask you a question. As a therapeutic recreation specialist, you must see I'm getting at lots of the ways that people break down as they age, regardless. You know, what do you see out there? Is it hips that go first? Is it knees? Talk about some of those things that you see.
Well, I think that there are some general things. But one of the biggest things that I have seen has actually been an increase of fear, of being afraid that if I fall, how will I get back up? If something happens while I'm hiking, how will I be able to recover? And so that ends up holding a lot of people back. What I would say is never stop. It's when you stop that things begin to break down. Being active is what keeps us alert and excited to get out of bed every day, right? So we have the expertise to get you out there no matter what your injury is. If it is MS or if it is Alzheimer's, we work with individuals of all ages, all abilities. That's our mission.
You know, listening to Liz answer that question, and I don't know which one of you wants to tackle this, but where's that line of somebody that, you know, Gail, you've talked about we have to meet our mission first. Well, you're blurring the line of the mission, it seems to me, as you expand into these other areas with this other audience. Although Liz just said, you know, fear can be one of those criteria that creates a point to work with and say, wow, if somebody's so afraid, that could meet your mission statement to help them move through that fear. So it's not only physical issues, it can be mental issues. But how do you determine if you have an issue or if you're just kind of, you know, getting older and you're not going to be as active as you used to be?
I mean, I think that's where we want you to come. And if you're not sure, come talk to us if we can help. Our mission is to empower individuals of all abilities to build self-esteem, self-confidence, and life skills through sport, recreation, and education programs. So I don't think any of that is blurry to me. And it is a very broad mission. Another thing that we're doing a lot to help support individuals is we have a lot of trainings, and Liz leads lots of this, that are free to the community to just come in and learn more about these different challenges or abilities that you're facing. And we just recently did one on lifelong engagement that can really benefit the community too. So we want you to be healthy, active, happy all of your life. And I know that that's what this show is about. And so we're here to support that in whatever way we can.
Well, and another way is through that volunteer engagement. And I just want to ask you this. How many people volunteer at the National Ability Center a year? And what's your need for volunteers? Because that's an amazing way to engage.
Yes, 1,100 annually, and about 400 to 500 of those are regular volunteers. So it's pretty huge and amazing, and inspires me all the time that that many folks get involved. But for sure, sometimes we talk to people in the community, and again, I can use my family as an example. They're not here, but you know, my dad could use a little more social engagement, and we're a great mm-hmm. organization that's got a lot of activity. I swear, we have such a small little ski center, if you've seen that, and you yeah. cannot be bored there because it is constant. And we need instructors, so we need anyone with skiing experience. We need assistance, if you can just help. As I mentioned, we had a wait list last time I checked. We had about 300 lessons on the wait list, and this is already for this first part of the winter. We know more lessons are coming in.
Wow.
That demand is there. We want to say yes, and we need the help of the community to do that.
With 1,100 volunteers annually and 400 or 500 that are regulars, I can't think of another organization. We have such great organizations in this town that utilizes that many people and
right.
engages that many people in that way. That's really quite amazing.
And I mean, that's part of our philosophy with our staff and our volunteers, that we are empowering those individuals throughout what we do. So if you're going to come and volunteer for us, we're going to give you a job. We're going to let you take the lead. We're going to let you go for it, because we want to empower you as well, and we want you to enjoy it. We want you to know that you're needed to make our mission happen.
We've got to let you go, but I'm dying to ask you this. I don't have a lot of free time. Mm-hmm. I'd love to volunteer. Is there like a minimum amount of volunteer time?
I know. Can you leave early? And will there be wine?
Oh, stop. Yeah, those questions too.
We are very flexible. We can have you help in a ton of different ways.
Okay.
If it's one day a week or one day a month even, we have events that we are always needing volunteers for. So if you want to get involved, we can get you involved.
And we could for sure use some help building a Nordic program too. So
definitely.
Just putting that out there.
Okay. I heard that loud and clear. So did Tim. Gail Loveland, Executive Director of the National Ability Center, and Liz Longhurst, Therapeutic Recreation Specialist. I'll get that right. Thanks so much for your time today. It's a pleasure speaking with you as always.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
And stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll be talking about more wellness and life lessons, this time mountain mantras. It's from the Slopes. Catherine Kemp Guiley joining us in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a not-for-profit community hospital and a proud supporter of KPCW. At Park City Medical Center, our OBGYNs use the latest surgical advances, like minimally invasive hysterectomies, endometrial ablation, and laparoscopic procedures. Even better, they also offer the convenience of having your procedure close to home. Doctors Jeannie Falk, Lorraine Sabella, and Jeremy Clark are the only OBGYNs who practice surgery and deliver right here in Park City. Make an appointment today by calling 435-658-7400.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, what is it that elite athletes, specifically those in skiing disciplines, have learned and know about setting intention, having a vision, and creating goals to guide the journey? We're joined now by Sun Valley author Catherine Kemp Guiley to talk about what she has learned from interviews with athletes and her own life experiences. Skiing that is contained in her book, Mountain Mantras, Wellness and Life Lessons on the Slopes. Catherine, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be in Park City next week for a wonderful visit.
Well, we're excited to have you come down. We love Sun Valley, actually. Both Tim and I, we come up quite often for the Boulder Mountain Tour. In fact, Tim, every year.
Almost.
I
used to live there in 84 and 85.
It's a great place.
I think we're kindred spirits. And, you know, I think what's so wonderful about both of our towns is that we support our nonprofit organizations and charities so with such vigor. And I'm so excited to announce that 100% of the proceeds for the entire month of December for the book will be given to charities. And what's so exciting is one of the benefactors is right there in Park City, Fast and Female. Last time I was in Park City, I actually participated in a fantastic wellness workshop for parents that was through the Fast and Female organization. And let me tell you, we were very impressed.
That's right. It's an impressive organization, and that's great to hear. So let's talk about you. You know, you moved to Ketchum, a transplant from other places. No doubt you were much like many folks who have moved here in the last decade or two, or maybe ever. You know, we just want a different lifestyle. We want to live in the mountains. We want to raise our children in the mountains. And you're so funny. You remind me of some people I know here who, you know, you come and you're in this atmosphere of elite Olympic athletes, and all of a sudden you go, oh no, I have to learn how to do this stuff.
Yes. It can be very intimidating at first because you know, I'm from the Midwest. A hill is, you know, it's basically non-existent. And so when you come out here, you know, the landscape is overwhelming, but the people are fantastic and can be a little bit overwhelming. You start to ski with people and they say, oh, yeah, I was in the Olympics twice. Or you're on the Nordic trails and you find out, I mean, the boulder, that's 33K. I mean, it's a big deal. And so you're really hanging out with some incredible people. And if you've ever seen the movie Wayne's World, I felt like Wayne and Garth when they went to that Alice Cooper concert, and they went to, you know, the backstage, and he's like, yeah, hang out with us. And they're like, I'm not worthy. You know, I mean, that is sort of how I felt when I got here. I've been a runner my whole life. It's not like I'm inactive. I'm a pretty active person, but the people here really blow me away. Same thing in Park City. But when you really get to know these folks, they are so down to earth, so warm and friendly, so approachable, and there's so much to learn from them.
Well, Catherine, let's talk about that learning from them. And, you know, you have done what a lot of people can't do, which is you've immersed yourself into this new environment, but you must have immersed yourself with a certain degree of awareness or a lens or a filter that you've looked through that has sparked your curiosity about these folks, these elite athletes. And what, I guess, first question is, what drew you to their stories and thought that there was something interesting to do inquiry around?
Well, I come from a background in management consulting. So I've worked with, you know, Fortune 500 companies. I've worked with incredible leaders. I've worked with incredible people that are really, you know, making a huge difference in the world, in the corporate world. And so I always sort of looked up to these people and thought, wow, you know, these are thought leaders. They've got their act together. Then, as I started to hang out with athletes, I realized in so many ways how elite athletes, and actually what they pass on to all of us that live in these towns with these elite athletes, they're way ahead. They're way ahead of the corporate leaders and CEOs, many of, you know, who I worked with. So an example, I interviewed Liz Steven, who is a Park City local, and Keegan Randall on my radio show. I have a wellness radio show here in Sun Valley. And we were talking about manifestation. We were talking about vision. We were talking about when they start a race, the use of their body positioning. They talked about how they use the Wonder Woman pose, which is a highly studied body positioning. Amy Cuddy is the leader in this field. She's out of Harvard. But she talks about how if you put your hands on your hips and your feet are in a kind of wide stance, it actually gives you more power in your group, and actually it raises your testosterone. And it lowers your cortisol, which is, you know, something they tested in the bloodstream of people that were doing this. So they were telling me these stories about body positioning, about visualization, and basically the mental game of what they're, you know, what they're putting into their practice. And then I came home to talk to my husband, and he's in the finance world and works again with a lot of CEOs. And I said, Jeff, do you do this before a meeting? And he goes, no, what are you talking about? So it just kind of illustrated the point that these athletes are so far ahead in their thinking about manifestation, visualization, and body positioning versus, you know, some of the leaders in the business world.
Well, and that's interesting. And speaking to Liz and Keegan about those things, what do you think was, well, when did they come to visualization and the ability to manifest and to create the vision that these elite athletes are able to do? Because, you know, they're young people.
Absolutely. And what's so interesting is they have such incredible experiences at such a young age. They do have access to incredible sports psychologists, so there's that. But the Superwoman pose, you're going to laugh at this. Liz told me that she was watching, I think it was a Grey's Anatomy episode, and she said the doctor assumed that pose right before he went into a really difficult surgery, you know, to give himself more power. And they're like, what is he doing? And they're, you know, these are U.S. ski team members, you know, watching this, and what are they doing there? So they looked it up, and sure enough. So they're getting their information from various sources, but they do have access, again, through sports psychologists and, you know, one-on-one coaching and nutritionists that work with them. So they're really ahead in so many ways.
Did they, I mean, right here in Park City, we have the headquarters of the USSA and the Center of Excellence, and most of those elite athletes spend a great deal of time at the Center of Excellence, and they focus on exactly those things that you're talking about, mental preparedness and picking up those skills to put them way ahead of, as you mentioned, people in comparable positions in the corporate world. Do they talk about the Center of Excellence?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where the Fast and Female event was held. I was able to go in and see just the incredible facilities that are there. It's very impressive. But, yeah, access to the different resources that can train them. And, you know, I just also think that there's this camaraderie among the team where they teach each other. One thing I will never forget is, you know, I went to a talk by some U.S. ski team members, and I thought they were going to talk about the weeks leading up to a big event as being really intense training. And what they said was rest is underrated. Rest is paramount. And again, I think that's another parallel that we can take to the rest of the world, the business world, to ourselves, is sometimes we're just pushing and pushing and pushing, and we're trying to, basically we've got our heads down just trying to get through to the end, when maybe it's better just to take a step back and take a deep breath and then reassess. That's the Stephen Covey sharpen the saw kind of thing that, you know, these elite athletes reminded me.
You know, it's interesting that the closer you get, the more up close and personal you get to these elite athletes. It's heartening to find that they're human, they're mortal. They, you know, do things like sleep 8 hours a night and rest until they recover. And like, we go down to the coffee shop on Main Street after this show, and we often see Josh Christensen in there, gold medalist. And, you know, he's in there getting his coffee just like we are, mid-morning. And that's what I think is so special about living in these towns, is that up close and personal that you get.
Absolutely. And when you do approach these folks, they are so warm, open, and friendly, and likely to share their lessons with you. And that was really what was so fun about writing the book, was to be able to sit down and talk with, you know, with Olympic athletes, to talk with X Games athletes, to talk, you know, to incredible cross-country skiers, and really kind of pick their brains. And it was like, wow, this is truly, you know, these are golden nuggets.
Right. Well, you learn these lessons from elite athletes, and then your book, little vignettes about a lot of them, your own stories about having to be humbled, shall we say. And I just use the example because I love to Nordic ski, and I know Muffy Ritz and the Boulder Mountain Tour, and how you wanted to join the Vamps, which is the women's group in the Ketchum Sun Valley area. And it's just so funny, the stories that you tell. It's that humility that you bring to it that's kind of endearing.
Well, I think what's so important, and I've learned this from being in the nutrition field, I think it's so important to take ourselves off the pedestal in order to educate and inspire people. I mean, even if a simple thing like when you're trying to teach somebody to cook, if you have a chef's coat on, you're immediately creating a barrier between yourself and your students. Same thing, you know, sometimes those letters behind somebody's name can create a barrier. And so really, in everything I do, my work with Nurture, the nonprofit organization, and my healthykidsideas.com site, and now this whole work around mountain mantras, it's really about, you know, getting off the pedestal, just like those elite athletes do when you actually approach them, and then, you know, being humble, you know, being it's okay to be afraid, it's okay to have fears, and how do you use fear to be an asset to you? And so it was really important for me in the book to kind of say, hey, I might be a nutrition expert, but I'm messing up all the time.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. So you'll be coming to Park City next week for a book signing. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, so we start out in Salt Lake City. So I will be at Weller Bookworks from 5 to 6:30 on Thursday, the 10th. I'm excited for that. My son's going to head over to Snow Gresham while I'm doing the talk, and he's going to practice his skills. Then we're going to head into Park City. We'll be there for Friday and Saturday and hopefully part of Sunday. But I'll be at Dolly's Bookstore, one of my favorite spots in town. That's going to be at 6 p.m., and I'll have some free prizes, and I'll be signing books. That's Friday the 11th. And then I'll be at the Park City Library just doing an hour-long talk, very short, to the point, kind of après-ski hours. So that'll be from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Park City Library on Saturday the 12th.
Great. All right. That's lots of good information there. Catherine Kemp Guiley, thank you so much for your time. It's Mountain Mantras, Wellness and Life Lessons from the Slopes.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Bye. And that was fun. I like when you put your stories down. You know, it's good information.
And there are so many commonalities between this town and Sun Valley. You know, it's always been a place that Sun Valley has always drawn Olympians, but generally to become residents there once their careers are done. And every now and then you hear about an Olympian who was a local from Sun Valley. And yet here we have all the legacy facilities and the training centers, and we have become kind of the epicenter, it seems, for current Olympians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back with our very own local, homegrown author of children's books. It's Katie Mullally when we return.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. There are many lands out there, Land of Oz, Land of the Dead. Land before time, there's a good one. Now you can add the land of or and the land of and to the list. Here to tell us about her new book, In the Land of And, which is a follow-up to The Land of Or, is local author Katie Mullally. Welcome, Katie.
Good morning.
It's great to have you. So you've got a book signing coming up in December.
Yes.
Later on.
Yes. Dolly's. I'm at Dolly's on December 19th from 6 to 8 p.m.,
Okay. And so we spoke with you when you came out with The Land of Or, which you're being quite prolific here, because that was just, it seems like a couple of months ago.
It was in August. These two bumped up closely together because of the just issues with timing, printing. I had the first one printed in China, Land of Or, so it was an extra 5-week delivery. And Land of And, I already had it mostly written when Land of Or came out, and it was actually the illustrations had been started, and so it just, the timing just worked that here they are 5 months apart coming out.
Okay, so The Land of And, beautifully illustrated by Toby Allen, and I understand he's from England, and his illustrations are so cool. That's
he's,
all I can come up
amazing.
With.
He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. He's, when I started writing these books, I wanted to find some artist to inspire me, and I had fallen in love with his work prior to that and had images of his that I'd printed on my desk, especially some of the characters. The Yabbit in the book was inspired directly from one of his illustrations. And when it came time to find an illustrator, contacted him, he was able to do it. He thought it was going to be a lot longer because he was very busy, but his schedule freed up, as it should have, because it's our books now, and we started working together, and we have such an amazing collaboration. It's things happen so quickly. I put down an idea, he gets it immediately, he sends it back to me, I go, it's perfect, and I'm able to affect his illustrations and how, and his illustrations affect my writing, because as we work on the third and fourth ones that we're working on right now, because we're both starting at a similar point, his ideas are coming to me. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I can write that in. Or you know, I can change my stories depending on what he sees as a vision for the backgrounds and the illustrations.
And the backgrounds are, there must be a story about that, because The Land of Ur, the first book, seems like very familiar southern Utah landscapes and background. And then the one that Lynn's holding, The Land of And, is much more of an alpine landscape. Is there a progression to the stories?
Not necessarily. Land of Ur, with it being the first one, I love Moab. Everyone does. And those of us that are familiar with it just are so drawn to it. So why not create a children's book that, if people aren't familiar with Moab, that they'll just be attracted just by the images themselves. And with the storyline of Land of Ur, where you travel through and it's all about making good decisions, the topography seemed to fit. And so, you know, the combination of the unique landscapes, the pathways you can take through Land of Ur, that was just how that turned out. Land of And is more of a river trip because it's about inclusion and it's more organic and flowing, and you come around the corner and, oh, look, there's, you know, that, oh, look, that behold that strange flock over there on the dock. And so it just fit the landscape. The one, you know, I'm working on right now, Land of When, and it's about how to use patience. Well, that's across a glacier because, you know, glacial time, it's so slow. And Land of How is going to be a puzzle. So there's not necessarily any specific progression or standard. It's just whatever feels right that suits the story.
We haven't even mentioned that these are children's books. Right.
Yeah.
But I specifically didn't mention that because they're really great lessons for anyone, for old kids, for adults.
What's been great is Maddie Shear contacted me from the Park City Foundation, and she does an occasional roundtable with leaders, nonprofit leaders or their associates, and she had me come in and read Land of Ur, I think it was in November, to this leadership group, these, you know, business leaders or nonprofit leaders, and talk about the concepts behind making choices, and they loved it. I mean, how often do you get to go to a professional meeting and have this great book read to you? National Ability Center, it was great that Gail was in here. They're getting a copy of Land of And because, again, it's about acceptance and inclusion and accepting differences. And that's so much of what they do up there. And so these books have so many uses besides just reading to your kids at night. I want them to get, I had to put children's books because that's what the industry requires, but I want everyone to read these.
You've had a plan for 4 books. Was that the original plan?
No, I have a plan for 12.
12 books.
Yeah,
okay.
I have 12 outlines.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Pardon?
Talk about that a little bit. I mean, was that from the beginning?
Yes, from the beginning. I had this series of names that came to me at a party. Land of Ur, Land of And, Land of Why, Land of How, et cetera, et cetera.
As all good things do come at a party.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's where all brilliant ideas come from. And then I had this other idea of wanting to create tools for kids for more mindful living. You know, I did the Thriving Lifestyles Guide all those years ago and thought, well, how can I expand upon this? And so these two ideas were battling, you know, were rattling around my head, and they finally collided with one another, fortunately, that take, you know, creating these guides and put them in these lands. And so I went and I outlined every name of a book with a different idea of what the subject matter would be. And so I've done the research for most of them, and some of them are evolving.
I've got to ask you, you say it came to you and the names came to you and you created an outline, which I think is just amazing to have that sort of vision and scope to go, oh, I've got 12 books that I could do. They're going to be children's books. They're going to deal with these concepts. And you framed it right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem odd to you, or is that just a natural way that it kind of
really
unfolds?
Organized.
And well, there's an organic inspired component to it, and there's an organized component to it, which I think is fascinating.
Oh, thank you. I think it's one of the things that, you know, when you decide in your life, there's something I want to do. For me, it was making positive changes, and especially with kids. I've worked with kids in so many ways, whether it's teaching skiing or karate or mountain biking or anything. And I love the idea of, if we can get these tools into kids' hands, any tools into kids' hands, they're going to be the best at affecting change, whether it's in their adult lives or for the adults around them. And so, you know, a couple of years ago, I just said, you know, I want to do something that's going to make a difference in terms of affecting individual people. And once that idea came to me, it was almost like the floodgates opened where, okay, the muses went, all right, we're going to pick you to give these ideas to. And just started thinking about it, taking some time, writing different ideas. I mean, I've had a bunch of other ideas that never came to fruition. But it was just that, I think it's that start of the creative process. Is it this? No. Is it this? No.
You know, and we talked to Liz Gilbert about her new book called Big Magic.
Yeah.
That's exactly what she talks about. About everybody has this creative process and can be a channel for it if they just, if the right things align and come together. And for some people, it's like a floodgate opening. Yeah. And you've experienced that.
Yeah.
That's really fun.
And allowing it to happen as well.
Exactly. And it's not getting hung up. The first few ideas don't work. Don't stop. Keep thinking about different ideas. Take a break and maybe draw, maybe knit, maybe cook. You know, just keep, if you maintain a creative flow, even if it's not specific to what you hope to do, it's still those synapses firing in the right ways where the creativity comes.
And, you talk about the healthy lifestyle guide that you did for the Summit County Health Department being so many years ago, but it was just like last year.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, and so
it's still relevant. So
the point there is that all this has come to you pretty quickly, and you've had a huge amount of inspiration, and you've cranked this stuff out, and so you've allowed it to, and it all has converged. I think it's so great. I want to have you just read, before we let you go, The Land of Anne. You said it's on a river, and it's kind of about the flow and seeing things on the side of the river. And
can I read you my favorite spread?
Oh, please do. Please do. I was looking for one that you could read just a page.
I shouldn't have a favorite.
But right, you're not supposed to have a favorite. It's like all your.
And the one thing that's great about these books is that, I decided to not put any humans. You'll notice there are all these crazy characters. I didn't want to get into issues of male, female, race, color, gender, any of that. So this is my favorite spread, as you can see the big pink creature. And it goes, so you say you feel wary because that one's so hairy and it can't even see its own feet. It has massive white teeth and it hides them beneath its fur until it needs to eat. But it's nothing to dread. Our fears we must shed, because it is really quite sweet. See, difference not weird or a thing to be feared. It only means not just like you. As we float through this land, what you must understand is that you may seem strange to them too.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's my favorite.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Again, give the dates that you're going to be.
So I'll be at Dolly's on December 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. You can go to my website, landofchildrensbooks.com. And I know you guys will have it on your site, because in addition to the books, I have all sorts of free resources. You can print up guides. There's color in Yabbits. There's, posters.
Is the name Yabbit because of Yabbit?
Yep. Okay. And the Yabbits in all the books. We're creating a sly of Yabbits. Not a flock, not a herd, a sly.
A sly, that's a new one. Katie Mullally, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And want to thank our other guests today. We had Gail Loveland and Liz Longhurst and Catherine Kemp Guiley. An interesting program today. Also want to thank our underwriters.
The doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, Alpine Apothecary, and Park City.
And we'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Karen with Alpine Apothecary. KPCW and the Mountain Life keep us abreast of the latest news and health findings. At the Apothecary, we help our health-minded community by being a local source for high-grade nutritional supplements with up-to-date wellness information. Alpine Apothecary, providing specialty pharmacy and nutrition.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. You've been listening to KPCW Park City, and it's now time for news, followed by Rudy on the Radio, right after this.